Is the clock working, Ms. Clerk? Okay, all right. Mr. Eisenberg, are you ready to proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Clerk, can I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Robert Eisenberg with Agnes Hanley on behalf of the Nevada Department of Transportation. We're here today because the District Court granted summary judgment on an inverse condemnation takings case. This is not a pre-condemnation damages case. Those are two completely separate, independent theories of recovery. But in the District Court, the Landowners' Council conflated the two concepts and confused them, and they were able to convince the district judge to find that there was a taking, but using pre-condemnation damages analysis. And we contend that was wrong. In deciding summary judgment, the district court relied largely on the testimony of a consultant by the name of Gary Gray. Mr. Gray is the one who testified regarding his conversation in the barbershop with a city councilman. But even more incredibly, and I swear I'm not making this up, Mr. Gray testified that he has the ability to determine when city bureaucrats are talking in code language. And he testified that when an unidentified city bureaucrat from the city of Las Vegas told him it would be difficult for Ad America to get a building permit, he interpreted that as code, meaning that the city had a de facto moratorium on all building in the footprint of Project NEON.
Mr. Eisenberg, before you get too far into this, first is, what is our level of review in the summary judgment issue? And secondly, I guess just clarification, it was summary judgment, and if I understand it correctly, it was summary judgment as to inverse condemnation. They did plead pre-condemnation, but that was not part of the motion that was before the court.
That's correct. The pre-condemnation damages claim was part of the complaint, but it was not resolved as part of the summary judgment proceedings. And to get to your first question, the summary judgment standard of review is, of course, whether there was any evidence supporting an inference against summary judgment. But we contend, and the law is clear, that whether there was a taking, an inverse condemnation taking, is a question of law to be decided by this court based on the record. We contend that the record is clear that there was no taking as a matter of law, and summary judgment should have been granted for end. At the very least, there were, if you don't accept that argument, then there were factual questions that should have been resolved by the district court.
Ad America asserts that there were no facts in dispute and summary judgment was correct, and you, on behalf of the state, are asserting that there were facts in dispute.
Well, as I said, we believe that the undisputed facts show there was no taking as a matter of law because of the law that says that government planning does not constitute taking. And so we believe this was clear. This was a 15-year, the project itself was about a 20 to 25-year project. Ad America's property was going to be taking, if at all, 15 years later. And so we contend that under Nevada law, Sproul Homes and other case law, and case law from around the country, that as a matter of law, there was no taking here. At the very worst, there might be a claim for pre-condemnation damages, but that was not resolved and really isn't an issue here. The law establishing the rule that planning does not constitute taking is based on some pretty strong public policies. Public policy that governments have to be able to plan and they have to be able to conduct long-term planning, particularly with road freeway planning. And they have to be able to do that without the fear that their long-term planning in a situation like this, a 15, 20-year project, that that will constitute an immediate taking of all the property within that long-term plan.
So part of your argument in that regard is that
That would also hinder the openness of the process.
Right, and that's the second.
That goes back to your issue with Code Talk. Or did that go toward, were you making that point for the purpose of demonstrating futility in?
Well, the second public policy, in addition to allowing governments to engage in long-term planning, is to encourage openness and transparency in what they do. And in fact, because the Nevada Department of Transportation gets federal funds, they're required by federal regulations to do several things, including environmental impact studies, cooperation with other local government agencies, and openness so that the public can have input and the public can know what's going on. And here, the compliance with the federal regulations was used to punish NDOT and to say that they took this property because they engaged in this open dialogue and engaged in cooperation with local governments. And those are precisely the reasons why this court and other courts have said that long-term planning does not constitute taking. Now, the impacts of this decision could be tremendous. And I have a map that's from the appendix that shows, I'll step away from the podium for just a moment, but the blue line is Interstate 15. And Project Neon runs from Sahara here all the way up to the Spaghetti Bowl, which is off the map here. And Adam America's property is 4 acres down here by Sahara. The one piece of property that the city of Las Vegas acquired up here on Bearden Drive, and they didn't even condemn that property. They had bought it on the open market. It was for sale. That was at a time when the city wanted the Martin Luther King Industrial Flyover, which was here, which has since been abandoned. So if this court affirms the district judge's decision that this planning activity, 15 years down the road, took Ad America's property down here, you're essentially going to be saying that NDOT took all the property for Project Neon on this entire 3-mile stretch from Sahara up to the Spaghetti Bowl, and then it even extends beyond the Spaghetti Bowl. That could be the impact. And you're also, the other impact of your decision, it would be that it will stifle government planning at every level in the state, cities, counties, and the state, because at every level there will be the fear that if they engage in long-term planning, whether it's roads, parks, any other public work process, public works project, that they will be subject to some kind of a takings claim. There's also, I should mention, a constitutional provision that says that if property is taken by a government and then the government does not use that property for the purpose for which it was taken within 5 years, then the landowner has the right to buy it back. And so if you, because of that constitutional provision, if you apply a takings analysis to a long-term 15-year project like that, you can imagine that the government would begin to have taken the property. 5 years later, might have to sell it back to the owner. Then there'd be another taking later on when they eventually need it, if they eventually need it. And it could just be a nightmare to figure out the practical consequences of that.
Mr. Eisenberg, at the time that the court found that taking had occurred, and I'm just using that for point of the question, had any application been made by Ad America for any other use of the property? Were they still receiving any income for rental value? What was going on at the time?
It was a commercial rental property. They were still receiving rents, and as we pointed out in our reply here, during the 4-year period of time after the alleged date of taking, they had almost $1.5 million of rental income on the property. The owner of Ad America wanted to apply for to build a medical office building instead of the commercial things that there are now. But he never applied. And there was no testimony, no admissible evidence, that if he had applied, his application would have been denied. It was all based on the speculation of Gary Gray. And so that property, to this day, is still generating commercial rental income. In fact,
but wasn't there a decrease in that rental income for a significant period of time?
They alleged that, but that was also at the same period of time when the economy basically collapsed. And it's rank speculation to say that their rental reductions on that property were somehow tied to Project NEA. And even if they did have some rental reductions based on Project NEA, that still doesn't constitute a taking. That might be relevant in a pre-condemnation damages case, but it doesn't transform it into a taking under Nevada law. I think I would like to reserve the rest of my time unless the court has any more questions for me.
Okay, Mr. Eisenberg, thank you.
Thank you.
Just one question before.
Yes.
Mr. Eisenberg, before you sit down, there was a finding as to the date of taking, reference our jurisprudence about the day of issuance of the summons and complaint. Is that appropriate in inverse condemnation?
The date of taking can be different from the date of valuation, and that's where it comes in. The judge found that as a matter of law, the date of taking was the October 2007 date. The statute says the date of valuation is the date of service of the summons and complaint. The Ad America is, of course, arguing that they have to be the same, but the statute is a statute, and the statute is protected by the presumption of constitutionality.
There's a Supreme Court case that goes the other way, U.S. Supreme, as to inverse condemnation. Is that appropriate?
I'm not aware of any U.S. Supreme Court case that said that a statute like ours would be unconstitutional. And in addition, Nevada statutes have other mechanisms to guarantee that the property owner is provided with just compensation. For example, interest rates can be adjusted, pre-judgment interest rates.
I'm looking at the First English Evangelical.
I'm sorry?
First English Evangelical case, U.S. Supreme Court case. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
No, I'm not. But did the court say that the date of valuation has to be the same as the
question is just compensation is measured at the time. And so there's an issue that arises as to inverse condemnation opposed to straight condemnation.
Well, this court has said that inverse and regular condemnation should be treated essentially the same. And I would remind the court that you never really need to get to that issue if you determine that there was no taking in this case. Thank you. Okay.
Ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
May it please the court, Justice Hardesty, members of the Supreme Court, Brian Padgett for Ad America, as well as co-counsel Kirby Grucco. Mr. Grucco will be handling the issue of the time of the taking and the date of taking. I will be handling the issue of whether or not a taking occurred. So I'll start, if it may please the court. Judge Earl has been on the bench for a long time, and he made, under Bustos, under the City of Las Vegas v. Bustos, it says that a district court's finding of fact will not be disturbed on appeal if they are supported by substantial evidence. We've had three hearings between July and December of 2012. We've had 14 separate pleadings filed and more than 8,000 pages of exhibits filed for Judge Earl's consideration. Based on this, Judge Earl found a taking as of October 24, 2007. He found that NDOT stripped the landowner of his investment-backed expectations on the property, and he found that NDOT's cumulative actions deprived the landowner of his use and enjoyment of the property.
And so what facts, Counsel, what facts did he use to support those findings?
The first thing he looked at, let's talk about the interference with his investment-backed expectations, Your Honor. Mr. Belinsky, the primary owner of AdAmerica, purchased three parcels totaling 4 acres at the intersection of Sahara and the I-15. He had investment-backed expectations to build a five-story hotel on the property.
Did he ever make application for that?
He hadn't gotten to that point yet, Your Honor. What happened was he was in the process of, he had mapped the property, he had surveyed the property, and he had architectural plans made for the property. At that point in time, he sent his representative, Gary Gray, who does this routinely in the city of Las Vegas, to Councilman Gary Reese, whose ward it was in, and asked him, would he support this application? Mr. Reese said, no, he could not, because Project Neon was in the way. But subsequently, he also said...
There were a few other council members and a mayor. Did he approach any of them and ask the same question?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, say...
Did he ask the mayor or any of the other council members or only spoke with then Councilman Gray?
Your Honor, he spoke with Councilman Reese only. He spoke with Councilman Reese because it was Councilman Reese's ward, and the councilmen follow the council person whose ward the property is located in.
Weren't some other permits so issued prior to that in that same area?
Your Honor, actually, no, there weren't other properties in the path of the project approved for development that weren't first conditioned upon giving up property for the project. The first thing that NDOT did and through the city of Las Vegas was they amended the master plan of streets and highways. And what they specifically said with that was, they said, by amending the master plan of streets and highways, critical right-of-way will be preserved. Critical right-of-way will be preserved. And so Mr. Reese, council...
Did your client inquire to see if that would affect the plan that he had or just might mean some modification of the plan?
Yes, Your Honor. He did look into that, and it showed that 98.2% of the property was going to be taken under every single iteration of the plans that NDOT produced, even to this day produced.
Counsel, wasn't there a difference in what you were asserting, at least at the time of the trial, was the plan and what finally was adopted by NDOT after their public hearing?
Under every single iteration of those plans, Justice Douglas, it shows a total taking of the subject property. And I might add, subsequent to the filings of NDOT's counsel's last reply, NDOT did hold a public hearing where they again reiterated that this property isn't in Phase 5, but it's in Phase 2A and 2B, and it also shows a total taking. But the amendment of the Master Plan of Streets and Highways is key. And it's key because what it says is that if you are in the path of this project, you will not be able to develop because there are certain setback requirements.
But isn't this mere speculation based upon the planning that NDOT is doing?
No, it's not, Your Honor, because there's specific examples out there that my client could look at.
Such as?
Okay, well, let's start off here. If we look at the Wall Street property, which is behind the Wholesome Lofts, that property was approved for development of a multi-story complex, provided that they set aside property for Project Neon. That was later an inverse condemnation filed, and NDOT acquired it. Second, the public storage case, which is right next to the Walker Furniture property, that was approved for development, but that development was keyed upon being outside of the path of the project. NDOT cited 7 properties that they said that where they allowed applications and development. On 5 out of those 7, it showed that those properties were outside of the path of the project. And the 2 that weren't were either conditioned upon making way or accommodating the project, or they were outside of the path of the project. 2 other properties, the First Presbyterian Church on Charleston and MLK, they went in to seek a zone change, and they were specifically told at that point in time, and it's in our points and authorities, they were specifically told at that time that the property that they would be denied because the application would conflict with Project Neon.
They were told by Mr. Gray or by going through the application?
They were told by planning commissioners, Your Honor.
And that's something that your client did not do?
No, my client did not, Your Honor. But looking at the fact that it was in the path of the project, I think there's a little difference here. The difference is that in most of these cases, these landowners, when NDOT published their right-of-way maps, most of these properties that came in for application had room to develop. So they could still develop outside of the project because there was enough land. In this case, 98.2%, under any iteration of the project that you want to look at, shows an entire taking of the property. So that's the difference really here, Your Honor. Now, I would also say that what they did was they, as they said, they preserved the corridor for Project Neon, and they made clear that if you were in the path of the project, you're going to have to accommodate it by giving dedications, setting aside property like Wall Street for the project, except in this case, 98.2% of the property was being taken in its entirety for the project. Now, this left my client with no room to accommodate the project and no room to build. Zero. And so there was a point where Mr. Eisenberg said in his brief that, well, we had used an Exhibit E to show that the value of the property being taken in its entirety was 100%. And I would say to you that in every single iteration, Judge Earl showed or found that a total taking of the property was in fact the case. And I'm going to cite to this very quickly. MDOT's counsel at that time was questioned by the judge and was asked, so any way you evaluate this project, you have to have the plaintiff's land. And MDOT's counsel said, that is correct. Then after that, Judge Earl inquired, counsel, in any one of these alternatives that you were mentioning to me, was the plaintiff's property excluded? Excluded. And NDOT's counsel said, no, Your Honor, it was impacted in a different way, but under each of the alternatives, it appears it would have been a full taking. So when you look at that, and then you look at the fact that recently in August of this year, NDOT published another right-of-way set of plans that showed that we aren't in Phase 5, we're in Phase 2A and 2B. And in Phase 2A and 2B, it still shows, just as every single iteration of their plan show, a total and complete taking of my client's property. Now, since that time, and we asked, Your Honor, you made a good point. You said, did they apply for this development? Well, once it was made clear to them, to my client, that 98.2% of his property was in the path of the project, and based on subsequent examples, he would not be able to develop, let's take a look at it as an industrial property.
So when was this 98.2% that you're talking about? Because my review of the record tends to not agree with the timeline you're putting forth in terms of what was put before the court in terms of phase 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and the required public hearings that NDOT had to go through for purposes of acquiring federal monies to do the taking, which they had not acquired at the point in time you're talking about. So if you could direct me back to that or give me cites in the record, I'd appreciate that.
Your Honor, I asked for leave to file a supplemental authority in the interest of time so I can cite to that properly. I fear it might take a little
bit. I would appreciate that, but I also appreciate some relevant cites when you're making points in the record as factual.
Mr. Grucco is going to look at that, Your Honor, if I may continue. In any event, regardless of the hotel complex, or the office complex that Mr. Belinsky wanted to develop, when he bought it, it was an industrial property. And you don't need to make an application for him to continue on as an industrial property. But the problem was that the collective government action by that time completely deprived the landowner of his use and enjoyment of the property. Completely deprived the landowner of his use and enjoyment of the property. And Justice Perriger, you made a good point. You said, was he collecting any rents on the property? Yes, with what little tenants he has left, he is collecting rents, but I will make this point to the court. I filed a notice of supplemental points and authorities. This property is under foreclosure by the Clark County Credit Union for failure to fully and completely pay the mortgage payments. I went ahead and I filed a motion for preliminary injunction. It was granted for 6 months pending the outcome of this court's determination. At that point in time, the judge...
Counsel, this isn't part of the record. The court hasn't made a determination about your supplemental submission. I think you need to focus your argument on the record.
Sure, Your Honor. It's our contention that the landowner has been substantially and completely deprived of his property as a result of these collective actions. The Interstate 15 in Sahara is the most trafficked intersection in the state of Nevada. It has the most visibility, has the most exposure. If there was any property in town that could be fully occupied during the times in question, it was this subject property. There are over 250,000 cars a day, as I discussed in the Gallen case. Once it was made clear, however, that the property was preserved, my client had to disclose to prospective tenants that there was, in fact, a project coming through, that every iteration showed the property being taken. But he said, go see NDOT, find out what you, you know, find out what you see. If you're content, come back and rent from me. The tenants in this case, because it's a large industrial property, you've got sophisticated users at that particular site for large, big box industrial, they would have had to put in approximately $200,000 in tenant improvements in many cases. And Mr. Belinsky disclosed this because there are substantial monetary commitments that go with a lot of these tenants.
At that time, though, wasn't it considered to be part of the fifth phase of the project, which had a 2028 time frame?
Yeah. So at that point in time, however, Your Honor, they had already made it clear that they were coming through. There was conflicting reports as to what phase it was in, but I would say this. This is all one phase. When NDOT went ahead and they started to work on the I-15, they did an I-15 south, they did an I-15 north of the Spaghetti Bowl, and then they're looking at this between Sahara.
Right, but you're saying this hampered the ability to rent the property out for its optimal amount, but again, the 2028, that's a pretty significant lease.
Yeah, well, we can look at it this way, Your Honor. So right across the street from my client, who has the Highland property, he also has a property in there wrapped into the same loan. We'll call that the Western property. It's directly across the street, but it's outside of the path of the project. During all of the times in question, and by the way, let me just go back and make a quick point. Those monies that Mr. Eisenberg chose in rents also encompass the Western property, and that accounted for 40% of the rents that my client was able to collect. Looking at the Western property, which is outside of the path of the project, that was, is, and remains 100% occupied because it is not in the path of the project. In this particular instance, because my client's property is 85% tenant-based, he remains largely empty and does not have enough money to pay his mortgage, as we cited in our responsive brief, Your Honor.
Mr. Eisenberg indicated that this also occurred during the time that the recession started. Why couldn't that be a factor in this?
Well, I think we have to look back at the Western property, Your Honor, because today we've had more than 41 million tourists in Las Vegas this year. We've got more drop at the casino, more hotel occupancy, more convention space available and taken. And at that point in time, even today, the Western property is 100% occupied. It's a perfect property to service the hotel casinos. The Western property is 100% occupied and has remained 100% occupied since 2007. It's right across the street, but outside of the path of the project. In the path of the project, we have the Highland properties, which have superior exposure, superior access, and they're right now approximately 25 to 30% occupied, and that's why he's been unable, as we stated in our pleadings, unable to pay his mortgage. It's in receivership with Clark County. We expect it to be, as I've said in my responsive pleadings, foreclosed on by Clark County Credit Union. I'd like to turn this over to Mr. Krupko.
Before you step down, one question for you very quickly, and that is, if I accept the argument made by NDOT as being partially true, why should this not be viewed as a pre-condemnation and not condemnation or inverse condemnation?
Well, first of all, he purchased the property with investment-backed expectations to build an office building, and that he was not able to do that. But furthermore, and most importantly, he's been completely deprived of all use and enjoyment of that property, even as an industrial property, and we can look to the Western property as an example. He's not able to pay his mortgage. He's in receivership with Clark County. We expect the credit union to foreclose on the property, and there's no real...
There were facts that were not in the record at the time of that hearing that the court has already reminded you of.
Yes, Your Honor.
What were the expectations at the time of the hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. We did cite in our responsive brief that the property was in receivership by Clark County. We did notice that he was unable to pay his mortgage, and we did notice that he was in substantial risk of going into foreclosure in front of Judge Earl at that point in time. What I skipped to later was that it was already in the foreclosure stage. But at the district court proceeding, we did note that it was at substantial risk of foreclosure, and it had already been placed into receivership by Clark County.
Now, Your Honors, Kirby Brucker on behalf of Bank of America, we're out of time, but did you want to hear my position on the
date? Can you summarize your position on the taking date in about 2 minutes?
I can, Your Honor.
Please do so.
Thank you, Chief Justice and Justices. Good morning. Kirby Grucco on behalf of Ad America. In about 2 minutes, Judge Douglas, I wanted to indicate that on page 28 of our brief, PAP 1831, lines 5 through 16, shows the 98.2%. I also want to indicate that there's a question about the standard review. The standard review is as a matter of law under Molden and Sislak, and Bustos provides that the court's findings of fact should be given great discretion. With respect to the data evaluation, date of taking, you know, the question is why should the data evaluation and the date of taking be the same? And that is because this court and the Constitution and Nevada statutes all indicate the landowner must be put in the same position monetarily as if the property had never been taken. So if the property was taken on October 2007, the landowner must be paid the value of the property on that date for the taking on that date. No other valuation would put the landowner in the same position monetarily and provide just compensation. Any other valuation would either overcompensate or undercompensate the landowner if you don't use the date of taking in an inverse condemnation case as the date of valuation. It won't be provided just compensation. The government will either pay too much or too little for the taking. This is the rule of law in every jurisdiction we cited with the court. And Justice Douglas, you indicated the Supreme Court case that we cited. The jurisdictions that we've cited all indicate that even if the statute says something different, as a matter of law and a matter of common sense and a matter of providing constitutional just compensation, the date of valuation should be the date of taking in an inverse condemnation case so that the landowners paid the value for the property on that date of taking. That's the money they're supposed to have in their hands as if a hypothetical sale occurred on that date. NDOT hasn't cited any law that says anything to the contrary. They rely consistently on NRS 37.120. As I've explained, that all the jurisdictions that have looked at that, you know, the United States Supreme Court and other jurisdictions, including our sister state of Arizona, has indicated that even if the statute says that, it doesn't make sense to apply that rule of law in an inverse condemnation case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Grucco. Mr. Patchett, thank you. Mr. Eisenberg, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Did you want to gather up your stuff?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. What we heard several times is the word they. They preserved the corridor. They took the property. But what we don't know is who is the they. In the district court, and in the district court's finding, that they was NDOT and the city of Las Vegas, which, by the way, Ad America sued the city of Las Vegas but never served them. And so that's why they haven't been brought in here. But when he says they preserved the property, NDOT didn't do that. There's not a shred of evidence that NDOT preserved property up in Phase 5. And to the extent that they contend there was, and I just used the word they, to the extent that Ad America contends that NDOT is responsible for the liability or for the actions of the city, there's no case law that supports that, none. And the facts don't support it either. Council says, and he said it several times, that the Ad America was completely deprived of the use and enjoyment of its property. That simply is not true. They still have commercial tenants on that property. And even if he's right that only 60% of my $1.4 million figure was attributable to this property, that's still a lot of money that they've received over the years. In fact, council himself has his business license lists that property as his address. Ad America has not been completely deprived of anything. It's unbelievable to me that he continues to contend that this property, Ad America's property, is not in Phase 5. In his answer in this court, he said it was in Phase 1. Now he's suggesting it was in Phases 2 or 3. The affidavit from Mr. Melfabaum, who was the deputy director at that time and now is the director of NDOT, says, I am familiar with plaintiff's property, and according to the current construction schedule, the property will not be impacted by Project Neon until Phase 5, construction of which is anticipated to begin in 2028 or later, depending on the availability of funding. And the district judge specifically found that it was in Phase 5. Council talks about the fact that Mr. Belinsky disclosed to his tenants the fact that Project Neon was coming. Yes, he told his tenants, but what he told them was that it was imminent, not imminent, but imminent, immediate. And that's why some of his tenants bailed, because they thought it was coming. He never told them it was going to be 15 years later.
Unless he added some time, Mr. Eisenberg, so that Mr. Grukow could respond or make his point about the taking. Is there another point you'd like to make in the next minute and a half?
Regarding the taking date?
No, regarding any other subject. Oh. It's your rebuttal time.
Let me just glance at my notes real quickly here. I would just conclude by commenting that when he says that they took the property, nobody took the property. What they did was they identified it as property that might be taken 15 years from now. That is not a taking under Nevada law or under any state's law. So we request the court to issue a writ ordering the district judge to grant summary judgment to NDOT. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Eisenberg. Mr. Padgett, Mr. Grukow, thank you for your briefs and your arguments. The case will stand submitted. However, did you wish to supplement any further beyond the citation you provided, Mr. Grukow?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, that does it then?
Did what Mr. Grukow provided satisfy Justice Douglas? Otherwise, we would provide a citation.
Well, it's your reference, so Mr. Grukow indicates that satisfied the question, so we'll consider that to be the case, and it will stand submitted.